This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, I'm back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, game two of the NBA Finals tonight. And for the Bucks, it'll come down to the adjustments that they need to make. Plus, I want to circle back to the terrible trailer of the new Kurt Warner movie coming out. Hey, the Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. Baker Roofing has been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing. In 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. We'll get to game two of the NBA Finals in just a moment. But we closed out last hour talking about this new movie coming out based on Kurt Warner's career. It's called American Underdog. It'll be in theaters in December, probably just in time for the Christmas holiday. And if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You can also find the podcast online at Charleston Sports Radio, just simply charlestonsportsradio.com. Just simply click on our show page. Or you can listen to the podcast through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Find the show on demand there. But I was talking about this to close out last hour. Kurt Warner tweeted about it yesterday. He says, "Destiny belongs to the underdogs. Here's a first look at our movie American Underdog by Lionsgate in theaters this December." And it's a trailer, and it's been ripped to shreds online. And a lot of times people just like to be critical. That's what we do on social media, criticize everything. But I watched this trailer. It is horrendous. It looks like a low-budget film. You have to Google it. Watch the trailer yourself. Tell me if that would get you to the theater. It looks like a low-budget film, and it looks like a guy who's never thrown a football before. The actor playing Kurt Warner does kind of look like him. It's Zachary Levi, who is Shazam in the new movies Shazam, if you've seen those, or played Chuck, if you ever used to watch that show on NBC. We got Chuck now as a Hall of Fame quarterback. He can't throw a football. Looks terrible. And it just takes you out of the movie. By the way, Dennis Quaid is going to play Dick Vermeil. And Dennis Quaid, I loved him in the movie that came out around 2000 about...
The Rookie.
No, not that one. Sure, that's one too. But I was going to say Frequency, which isn't directly a sports film, but baseball plays a big role. But yes, The Rookie. See, now Dennis Quaid's pretty good in the sports movies because we've talked about this on the show before, but as I've always said, you have to look like an athlete. Otherwise, you're going to lose me. I can't watch a sports movie when the guy doesn't look athletic. Dennis Quaid in The Rookie was good. He was good in Frequency, just playing baseball with his son. Now he colored his hair. He's got some glasses on. He's playing Dick Vermeil, friend of the show, Dick Vermeil, in this movie as Kurt Warner's coach. And the actor, Zach Levy, you know, looks like Kurt, like his face. I see it. I can see the resemblance. But it doesn't look like him on the field. He looks pudgy. He can't throw the football. The old-school Rams jerseys look terrible. Trailer was embarrassing. So now I looked this up because we've talked about this on the show before. So I had to Google this and see, you know, who are some actors that are considered bad athletes in their roles. I always remember Tom Cruise. Again, wasn't even a sports film. But in War of the Worlds, when he in one of the scenes, he had to play catch with his son. And he threw the baseball so awkwardly, everyone was making fun of Tom Cruise. And that was before social media. But they were making fun of him like, man, this guy can't throw a baseball. So I looked up this list. Bleacher Report put together the worst athletic performances in a movie is what it is. Ray Liotta's number two from Field of Dreams. Now, this is unfair. They say because Ray Liotta, right, he played Shoeless Joe Jackson in Field of Dreams, and Ray Liotta's a righty. So in the movie, he was Shoeless Joe as a righty when Shoeless Joe was a left-hander in real life. That's kind of unfair to put on Ray Liotta. I don't know why they just didn't find an actor. As the story goes, they tried to teach him to bat lefty. And originally he was trying it, like on set and everything. And then with the coach, you know, because they always bring in either former baseball players or maybe current baseball players for a baseball movie, and you work with them and they work on your swing and ground, and they try to make things look realistic. They were working with Ray Liotta trying to turn him into a lefty hitter, and they're, yeah, this isn't working out. Like, this swing doesn't look good. So then they had the idea. They told Ray, okay, you bat right-handed, and then in post-production we're going to just mirror it. We're going to reverse it so that it looks like you're batting lefty. They're going, you know, they're going to use their Hollywood technique. And then Ray Liotta has told the story that, okay, you know, that's what they told him. So he played righty, and then when he watched the movie, he saw that in the movie he was still a righty. And he's like, what happened? You never made me a lefty. So that was a blunder. That was a miss by the producers. Why they had a right-hander play the role of a lefty, I don't know. But I can't put that on Ray Liotta. If you're a righty, go out there and try to bat lefty. Right? There's a reason why not everyone's a switch hitter. It's very difficult. They ranked John Goodman when he played Babe Ruth in the movie The Babe. They ranked that as the third worst performance. Bernie Mac in Mr. 3000 is also on this list. That's kind of an underrated baseball movie. I actually like it. They have, from The Blind Side, Quentin Aaron, who played Michael Orr, the offensive lineman for the Ravens. He made the list as an actor who did a terrible job playing an athlete in a film. Tim Robbins in Bull Durham is on the list. Actors that did a terrible job playing the role of an athlete. Because it just takes you out. Keanu Reeves is the replacements. Throwing a football is not easy, but in this movie, it looks terrible. Zach Levy. So anyways, there you go. Give you something to look forward to in December. The new movie on Kurt Warner called American Underdog, starring an actor that can't throw a football. Game 2 of the NBA Finals is tonight. Bucks and the Suns. Phoenix won the first game by double digits. They play Game 2 tonight in Phoenix, and they head back to Milwaukee. And for the Bucks tonight, it'll come down to adjustments or handling. Maybe they don't have to adjust anything, but doing a better job of handling the pick and rolls of the Phoenix Suns. It's why I said I don't take too much away from Game 1. Because Game 1 is always the feeling out process. And you see what the other team brings to the table. And then it's your job to then respond, to react, to adjust moving forward. And the Bucks saw what Phoenix brought to the table. Led by Chris Paul and Devin Booker and a lot of high pick and rolls for the ball handler and getting to the rim and drawing fouls and hitting free throws and getting easy buckets. And Chris Paul and Devin Booker leading the way and DeAndre Ayton having a good game. Now how will Milwaukee adjust? Because they got picked apart on those pick and rolls. No pun intended. Brooke Lopez, you know, couldn't keep up. Bobby Portis can't match up. Not only with the quicker Chris Paul and Devin Booker, but even with the more athletic DeAndre Ayton. Can't stop him either. Maybe a bad matchup for Milwaukee, but we'll see how they adjust moving forward in Game 2. And if Giannis is any healthier, if he's any better tonight, that could go a long way as well for Milwaukee. Because in that fourth quarter, when they started to make a little bit of a run, when they started to creep back into the game, they did so by sitting Brooke Lopez and Portis and by playing Giannis at the five, at the center. In fact, you know, Giannis played 35 minutes in Game 1. When he was on the floor, the Bucks outscored the Suns. When he was on the bench, the Bucks were outscored by 14. Meanwhile, when Brooke Lopez was on the floor, in just 23 minutes, Milwaukee was outscored by 17. When Portis was on the floor, in just 14 minutes, the Bucks were outscored by 10. So they're obviously better off with Giannis playing the five and Lopez and Portis on the bench. But Giannis needs to be healthy. See, even with Giannis at less than 100%, the Bucks still outscored the Suns when Giannis was on the floor. That's how big of an impact he can still have. So for Game 2 tonight, the two biggest keys, what adjustments does Milwaukee bring to the table? And if that adjustment is what I just said, playing Giannis at the 5, sitting Brooke Lopez, Bobby Portis, then what do the Suns do to combat that, to counteract, to return the volley, right? As we go back and forth in a chess match, you make one adjustment, we have to adjust to that adjustment. Then you adjust to our adjustment to an adjustment, and so on and so forth. And the Bucks did that at the end of Game 1. So Phoenix may have a plan that, okay, if they go with Giannis at the five, right, our pick and rolls weren't as strong. We actually got outscored in those situations. We couldn't get to the rim as easily. Here's what we're going to do instead. And that's where the chess match comes into play. And so far this postseason and throughout this year, I think I trust Monty Williams, head coach of Phoenix, more than I trust Mike Budenholzer, head coach of Milwaukee, in a matchup like this or in a moment like this when the coach needs to come up with some big strategy to make a big play to win a big game. We'll see what the Bucks come up with tonight. The other part to tonight's game, other than any potential adjustment or handling the pick and roll, is also the health of Giannis, because as I mentioned, at less than 100%, they outscored the Suns when Giannis was on the floor. Now, a little bit of that may have been garbage time. Giannis didn't play exceptionally well. For the injury, he played well enough and looked to be much better than I expected from him out there. But if he's a little bit healthier, right, if he's a little bit closer to 100%, if he could do a little more out there, if he can attack the rim a little bit better, the Bucks certainly will be better served. Now, the good news for Giannis and Milwaukee is that this is the quickest turnaround of the series. After this game, the two teams will have 2 days off in between every other game moving forward. So game three will not be until Sunday. And then game four will not be until Wednesday, so on and so forth, right? You get 2 games off in between. Some of those days will include travel, like after this one. They'll have to travel to Milwaukee and then play on Sunday. But this is the quickest turnaround with just 1 day in between. So in terms of Giannis trying to get healthier, that will be a break as well. Even if the Bucks lose tonight, it's not ideal. It's far from it to fall down 2-0 in the NBA Finals. But you'll be heading home. You'll get an extra 2 days off at that point, 2 more days until the next one. You hope Giannis is healthier. You'll be at home for Game 3, hopefully with a healthier Giannis, and you try to get back in this series. But tonight, what to look for Milwaukee? Look for any sort of adjustments in how they handle the pick and roll, and look to see if Giannis is any better tonight than Game 1 from a health standpoint. Because when Giannis was on the floor, and Portis and Lopez were not, the Bucks actually outscored the Suns in Game 1. And the healthier Giannis is, obviously, the better the Bucks will be. And they'll need him tonight and moving forward in this series. We'll see what sort of adjustments Budenholzer comes up with, a guy who isn't really big into adjustments. And we'll see if Giannis can have an even larger impact tonight, if he's even healthier, if he can play the role of the number 5 to handle the ball screens of the Phoenix Suns. Game 2 of the NBA Finals tonight on ABC. Coming up, it's Thursday, so you know what that means. We have to get to our wrestling wrap-up. Plus, a humorous but embarrassing moment from a baseball broadcaster last night. And you may not care about this. I'm a broadcaster myself, so, you know, I pay attention. But it's time to get the broadcasters back on the road. And I'll tell you why when we come back. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You're always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Tulsa that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours. Anything goes.
On the mark.
It's Thursday, which means we have to get to our wrestling wrap-up here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. This song always reminds me of You, Me, and Dupree. That's the film I always think of for this song.
It was also Ravishing Rick Rude's entrance theme
Perfect. There you go. Perfect song to lead into our wrestling wrap-up here in just a moment.
It was also used in a pre-recorded a promo by Buddy Landell.
Oh.
And that ties into today because we're going to talk about the Great American Bash. And he and Ron Bass wrestled to a draw in the very first match at the very first American Bash.
Oh, how about that? That's what they call me around here. Hey, are you stuck in your current position with no room to grow? Are you underpaid, undervalued, maybe overworked? If so, call Kearney & Sons 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating. They're local, they're family-owned, and they value family time. They've done so for over 37 years. Kearney & Sons believes you should earn while you learn, and they have training programs to get you to where you want to be in your career today. They're now hiring all full-time positions, optional four-day work week, and benefits like insurance, 401k, paid time off, and vacation, plus a signing bonus up to $5,000. Call Kearney & Sons 72 Degrees and start taking your career to new heights while still having time for the most important thing, your family. Call Kearney & Sons 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating today, 843-762-4305. Kearney & Sons 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating. Before we get to the wrestling wrap-up, I do want to touch on this because this came out of the baseball world last night and was very funny. It's making the rounds online. John Sterling is the voice of the Yankees. He just turned 83 this past weekend. So kudos to him for still doing the job at 83. And he's had a great career. In fact, he used to broadcast in Atlanta. He was the Atlanta Hawks broadcaster for a while and also did the Braves back in the 80s, maybe the 70s. So if you're an old-school Braves fan or even Hawks fan, an old-school Atlanta sports fan, you probably remember John Sterling broadcasting in Atlanta. But he's been the voice of the Yankees now going on just over 30 years. And he's legendary. And he's known for the funny phrases he comes up with, or not even funny, but the sayings, the expressions he comes up with for each player after they homer. He sings the Yankees win whenever they win. The pitch. Right? John Sterling is very legendary. He's got his own style. But he's also well known for, unfortunately, blowing a lot of calls over the course of his career. He gets very confused. Maybe at this point, part of it is the age at 83. Now, this year, part of it is having to do road games from Yankee Stadium. Anyways, here was John Sterling last night on the Yankees broadcast as they played the Seattle Mariners, and Sterling got a little excited over, well, you can hear the audio, something he probably shouldn't have.
Now, here is Judge. Man, the breaking ball is hit in the air to deep left. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Unfortunately, that was a replay of the home run, but it was a good replay. Hey, I'm sorry. It's on the monitor. What am I supposed to do?
This is a great way to do a game, isn't it?
Yep.
Ah, oh, poor John and his partner Susan Waldman there. Now, they are broadcasting from Yankee Stadium. The game's being played in Seattle. They're doing it off of monitors. If you have followed the sports world, especially the baseball world, you know that this is how broadcasters are doing it, TV and radio. And it's not just one monitor. They got the setup. They could see the bullpens. They could see the scoreboard, all that sort of stuff. And in fact, it's what we had to do for some of the Citadel games this year for basketball, where I had to do it off a monitor. It's not ideal. But poor John last night saw a replay of an Aaron Judge home run from earlier in the game, and thought it was live. Thought that was the pitch that was coming in. Now, look, I've looked down before. You take your eye off the action. You're writing your scorebook. You're grabbing a live read, whatever it is. You look up. He's working off a monitor. He sees the guy swing, hit a home run. He thinks, oh, boy, that's gone. It could have been something like that. It could have been bad timing. Maybe he just didn't realize. Maybe he thought it was live as it was going on. This happened in the third inning, though. So it was Judge's second at-bat. He homered in his first at-bat, and it was a replay. So you know, same pitch, same. He hits it to the same spot. And it happened two innings earlier. It wasn't like it was the ninth inning from something that happened in the first. You know, it happened probably 30 minutes prior, 45 minutes prior. So that's another way that you probably should know, like, wait a minute, we just saw this about 30 minutes ago. But I love the line from Sterling in which he said, like, it's on the monitor. What do you want me to do? Maybe not broadcast it, because we can't see the replay, so you don't need to broadcast the replay. So poor John with a big mix-up last night for the Yankees. Also, by the way, Braves broadcasters are going through the same thing. When the Braves play on the West Coast, or any of these East Coast teams play on the West Coast, they're broadcasting from the home stadium. So you got to stay up, right? So, like, John is 83 years old. They're playing in Seattle last night. He was on the air till almost 2 a.m. doing that game. Now, if you're a baseball broadcaster, you're used to late nights because the games usually go till 11 o'clock anyways, but 83-year-old John Sterling at an empty Yankee Stadium doing a game off the monitor until 2 a.m. And that was a big blunder. Calling a replay like he thought it was live. Fortunately, I have never done that in my career. Although, I have plenty of time for to pull off that screw-up in the future. Sterling is a legendary broadcaster, but unfortunately, in the recent years, has become well-known for his very bad mistakes on air. And that was one last night. With that said, broadcasters should travel. What are we doing here? I know it's a lot of companies trying to save a few bucks. There's no reason why they shouldn't. Aren't in there in Seattle calling that game live. I don't get this idea. Let the broadcasters travel again. TV, radio, let's get back to normal. ESPN's doing it for the national games, right? Most national networks are, but it's the local teams. Like the Braves, broadcasters are still working in Atlanta. The Yankees broadcasters are still working in New York. Marlins broadcasters are still working. Let them travel on the road, right? We're doing, fans are back in the stadiums. The players are all traveling together. A lot of them are vaccinated. Why can't the broadcasters go to these games and work in the press box? It's not like they're in the dugout with the players. It's not like they're in the stands with the fans. They're in the press box. They stay to themselves. They're in their booth. Let the broadcasters travel, and then we don't have to worry about John embarrassing himself. But a funny clip for sure from the Yankees last night of Sterling calling a replay thinking it was live. Poor guy. All right, with that said, every Thursday on the show, we always do a wrestling wrap-up. Wednesday was a big night in wrestling. Now every night's a big night, so we still call it the Wednesday wrestling wrap-up, but we refer to it really as the weekly wrestling wrap-up. Anyways, people wait all week for the opportunity. They can't wait to hear it. It is time for our Wednesday wrestling wrap-up.
It's time.
Look at this!
For Producer Joe's.
He's got the fans behind him.
Wednesday wrestling wrap-up.
It's like a dream come true.
Right here.
He's all fired up now.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
And if they're smart, they'll listen. So what are we waiting for?
What are we waiting for? Just like you were talking about, there are fans back.
Yes.
In the stands at ball games across the country.
Yep.
Well, this coming weekend at Ring of Honor's Best in the World and next weekend's Impact Slammiversary pay-per-view events, fans will be back in attendance.
All right.
Yeah, we're getting back into the way things should be.
Yeah.
Guess where else fans will be?
Where?
On Saturday, they'll be at the Hanahan Rec Center for Old School Championships Generations Show.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, some of the second, third generation wrestlers like Timmy Zbyszko. He's the son of Larry Zbyszko, the nephew of Greg Gagne, and the grandson of guy who was mentioned yesterday, late AWA World Champion Vern Gagne.
Oh, how about that?
He's going to be in attendance there, as well as Major League Wrestling World Champion Jacob Fatu, who's related to, you know, the famous Fatu and NOIE family.
Mm-hmm.
And another one there is going to be the late Terry Bam Bam Gordy's daughter. And I just lost her name. I am just such a slacker here.
Ah, unbelievable. Poor Bam Bam's daughter. Can't even get her name.
Yeah, it's right here in front. And it gets, let's see. Anyway, you can see them in action this weekend at the Hanahan Rec Center. And we were talking about the Great American Bash earlier when I mentioned Buddy Landell,
yeah,
you know, and Ron Bass. Well, NXT put on the latest incarnation of the event this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And one of the events that, now here's a connection it has to the original event that was held at American Legion Stadium in Charlotte back in 1985. Held on January 6th mm-hmm. at that year, and it was held on January 6th of this year. Well, in the main event of the original event, there was Dusty Rhodes and Tully Blanchard in a steel cage match for the NWA World Television Championship, and the stipulation was that Blanchard's then valet Baby Doll would be Dusty Rhodes' valet for 30 days if he won. Well, he ended up winning,
mm-hmm.
and just like the original event, there was that match between L.A. Knight, you know, and Cameron Grimes for the $1 Million Championship.
Mm-hmm.
The stipulation was if L.A. Knight won, Cameron Grimes would have to become his butler.
Oh, no.
And guess what?
What?
Knight won.
Wow.
So guess what? He has to be, you know, he has to be his butler. I don't know if there's, I have to go back and see if there's a, you know, certain amount of time he has to do it. But, you know, kind of a connection there to the original event.
Yes.
And also at the event, you have new NXT Women's Tag Team Champions, Io Shirai and Zoe Stark. They defeated The Way's Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. And also making her return appearance during that match, Tegan Knox. She's back from an injury that she suffered last September. And also, speaking of returns, Zelina Vega made her return to WWE last Friday on SmackDown. She ended up losing her return match to Liv Morgan, but she will compete in the Women's Money in the Bank match next weekend. Now, her real-life husband, Aleister Black, was supposed to be on a 90-day no-compete clause after his release from WWE, but thanks to a clerical error, he debuted on AEW Dynamite last night as Malakai Black.
Oh.
And also on last night's Dynamite, MMA fighters Dan Lambert, Jorge, let me see if I can get his name, Masvidal.
Yeah, sounds good.
And Amanda Nunes, they appeared on Dynamite in the stands. Of course, Lambert got to get up there and say that AEW sucks, and you have to go back to the 70s and 80s to see good wrestling, and wrestling's been on a downhill slide since the late 90s and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Lance Archer wasn't standing for it, and he took him out.
Oh.
But also had a real incident last night where a guy tried to get into the ring, and of course, security was taking him down, and even Chris Jericho got in a swing at the guy.
Like a fan? Like a regular
yes.
person?
Yeah. Somebody not employed by AEW.
Right.
Okay, and also speaking of a title change, Master Priest Chris Adonis defeated JTG in the tournament final this past Tuesday on NWA Power to regain the NWA national title. Okay, and then we talked about some of the MMA fighters earlier. CM Punk, his June 2018 fight against Mike Jackson. That decision has been changed from a loss for Punk to a no contest because Jackson ended up testing positive for marijuana on fight night. So even though this was way back at UFC 225, the decision to reverse, or actually the change in decision was not announced until now.
How about that? That's interesting.
Yep. Okay. Also, kind of some bad news here. Jimmy Uso was arrested on Monday night in Pensacola, Florida for DUI.
I did see that.
Yeah, okay, this is his second DUI in 2 years and his third alcohol-related arrest since early 2019. Mm. And here's a quote, "High-level people in power are extremely disappointed and legitimately, well, PO'd."
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, at this, yeah. Okay, and then also some really bad news. Former NWA World's Champion Terry Funk, he's reportedly suffering from dementia. Don Morocco has said on his Magnificent podcast that he has been moved to an assisted living facility in his hometown of Amarillo, Texas. Said that his health issues have worsened since the death of his wife, Vicky, in 2019. Mm. Now, Tommy Dreamer did speak with him, and according to Dreamer, this is a quote from the Funker. "I'm currently sitting in an assisted living place with my thumb up my ass whistling Dixie, but I don't remember the words." Only Terry Funk could say that. Now, Funk was also did some acting. He was in the Sylvester Stallone movie Over the Top, which also featured a then-future wrestler, Scott Norton.
Oh, how about that?
And we'll get to him in just a second. And it was also, he played the bouncer who was fired by Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse.
Hmm. Stallone, by the way, just turned 75 this week.
Okay. And then also, yesterday was the 25th anniversary of the formation of the NWO.
Right, yes.
We have an interesting audio here from friend of the show, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay.
Yeah, on his Broken Skull Sessions with Kevin Nash.
Oh.
The challenge here is Nash has to give as many names of members of the NWO in 30 seconds.
Oh, somebody to choose from.
Go. Hulk, Hall, X-Pac, Steiner, Luger, Sting, Conan, Macho Man, Bagwell, Scott Norton, Virgil. Horus. That threw me off. Perfect. Rude. Miss Elizabeth. Is he any in that?
30 seconds is up. Check out the big brain on Kevin. I couldn't remember that many.
Yeah, he ended up naming about 15.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But here's the thing, okay, between the NWO.
Yeah.
And then we even get the other factions of it, NWO Hollywood, NWO Wolfpack, the NWO Elite, which is when they got back together after the Finger Poke of Doom, the NWO B Team, and NWO 2000, and NWO Japan and New Japan, and the WWF, WWE versions. There were 62 members of the NWO.
Yeah.
That includes four celebrities, Kyle Petty, NASCAR driver, and basketball player Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Paul Gilmartin and Claude Mann, movie hosts and a movie chef. You know, they were considered honorary members as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, much like we were talking about the match yesterday, at a certain point, the NWO became played out. It was like, all right, enough's enough. Time for something different.
All right, and that's it for now. Between now and then, have a slamming good time.
All right, our weekly wrestling wrap-up. Stallone turns 75 this week. The most underrated Sylvester Stallone movie of all time, I think, is Copland. That was a good film from the 90s. We were just talking about Ray Liotta earlier. He was in that. De Niro was in that. Good film about Stallone, who was like he was a deaf cop, right? If that was that's what it was? Or he couldn't hear in one ear?
Yeah, I think he was missing his hearing in one ear, yeah. Or had been injured, and
right.
That's why he was working the small town
yes.
beat.
He couldn't be like a New York police. He couldn't be part of NYPD with De Niro and those guys. But good movie back in the day. So anyways, happy birthday to Stallone.
And my apologies to Miranda Gordy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so she, yeah, she can, take a shot at me anytime. And also, Davey Boy Smith Jr. is supposed to appear this weekend.
Oh, how about that?
You know, at Hanahan.
At the Hanahan Rec Center. All right. You going to go see him at the Hanahan Rec Center?
We'll see if I can get over there. I'm going to have a busy weekend.
Oh, okay. Now, do they actually wrestle, or is it just that they're the...
No, they will be wrestling.
Okay.
Yeah, most of them will be wrestling, to my knowledge.
I was going
to
say, otherwise you just show up and like, hey, my grandfather was a wrestler. You used to watch him. I'm the granddaughter. I'm the grandson.
And reportedly, Davey Boy Smith Jr. is probably the hottest free agent right now in pro wrestling.
Oh, so how about that? You could go see him at the Hanahan Rec Center. A heck of a gig. Coming up, I touched on this earlier, and I failed to mention this at the time, so we'll do it when we come back. The Big Ten. You're telling me the Big Ten's got all these great coaches, but the Big Ten, they're not matching up to what those expectations should be. And I was combing through the ESPN FPI data, and it also does not back up the expectations of the Big Ten. We'll get into all this when we come back. Plus, the most important game of the college football season this year. Which game will have the most impact? I'll let you know when we return. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show. On ESPN Radio.
Coming up, will it be an underwhelming year for the Big Ten? Plus, the most impactful game of the college football season in 2021. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Just did our weekly wrestling wrap-up. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as the wrap-up, you can always find it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, wherever you listen to your podcast. Online at charlestonsportsradio.com or on our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store and find the show on demand there. Earlier this afternoon, I was talking about the Big Ten because I thought it was interesting. CBS Sports put out their list of the top 25 Power 5 college football coaches for the upcoming season. And of the top 25, 8 of them coach in the Big Ten. The Big Ten had more of their coaches on this top 25 list than any other conference, more than the SEC. In fact, almost twice as many as the SEC. And this is just the opinion of the football experts or analysts over at CBS Sports, but still, I found it interesting. It stood out to me. And the Big Ten, with that said, right, if that's the case, if you're going to tell me that they have the best coaches in the country, well, then I would say that they need to do more winning. Why is it that Ohio State is the only team that has made the playoff? Why is it that the Big Ten has not won a playoff game or they have won just one playoff game in 6 years? Or outside of Michigan's shared title, Ohio State is the only team to win a national title going back to the 60s. Right? With the Big Ten, with the talent they're getting from a coaching perspective, the recruits they're able to get, the big fan bases they have, the best TV ratings they have, the money they bring in more money than even the SEC based off of their TV contract. Now you're telling me they got the best coaches around, better coaches than the SEC, which is the better conference, and coaching is huge in football. So how come the Big Ten is not right up there at the SEC? How come they're not the best team, or I should say best conference, in college football with all these great coaches? Part of it, I think, is that some of these coaches are on the defensive side of the football, about half of them. And we know nowadays it seems like offense is what is needed to win. And yet the Big Ten has been the lowest scoring conference in the Power Five dating back to 2015. They scored the fewest points in 2019 of all the conferences. They scored a touchdown less per game than the next lowest scoring conference. So it was a pretty big difference. Maybe that's part of the issue, is that while they have good coaches, they're good coaches on the defensive side of the football, and right now you need improved offenses to win. But I was looking at ESPN's FPI rankings, and they adjusted some of their numbers this week, whether it be the transfer portal or whatever. You know, they adjusted their numbers here this offseason. Some things have changed since the last time they crunched the data for the upcoming season. Alabama is still number one for the upcoming year in terms of playoff chances. Actually, I take that back. Their playoff chances aren't as high as Clemson, but they are the number one team in the FPI rank. So FPI has Alabama as the best team in football. They have Clemson number two, Oklahoma three, Ohio State four, Georgia five. That's the top five. No surprises there, according to ESPN's FPI. And then the back half of the top 10 is Texas A&M. Texas is actually number seven on their list, which I find surprising. Notre Dame, Iowa State, and Miami, number 10 on ESPN's FPI. In terms of playoff chances, Clemson has the highest at 78%. They have the best chance to make in the playoffs. Clemson also has the best chance to reach the national championship as well at 28%, ahead of Alabama. But as I was looking through this list, Ohio State is the only team of the Big Ten that's in the top 10. In fact, they're the only Big Ten team in the top 12. You have to go down to number 13 where you find Penn State. Then from there, Wisconsin is number 17. Then the next team after that would be Iowa at 23. So that'd be three teams in the top 22 for the upcoming season. And again, the two things aren't matching up. You're telling me that the best coaches are in the SEC, and yet this year the best teams are not expected, or I should say are in the Big Ten. The best coaches are in the Big Ten, and yet the best teams are not expected to be in the Big Ten. Doesn't add up. Additionally, when it comes to playoff chances, the Big Ten has only the fourth best odds this year of the Power Five conferences. The SEC has a 94% chance of having a playoff team. The ACC is at 82%, thank you, Clemson. The Big 12 is at 81%, and then you reach the Big 10 at only 63%, quite the drop-off. When it comes to chances of multiple playoff teams, the Big 10 is at 1% of having multiple playoff teams this year, just a hair ahead of the Pac-12 at just under 1%. That's the company the Big 10 keeps. They're fourth in the rankings in terms of getting a playoff team, and they're right there at the Pac-12 getting multiple playoff teams, 1%. Even the Big 12, 7%. Even the ACC is at 4%. The Big 10's only 1%. We know about Ohio State, but after that, what else has there been to write home about in the Big 10? You tell me there's great coaches, right? Whether it's Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, James Franklin at Penn State, obviously Harbaugh, the big name at Michigan. They brought in Scott Frost. You got Paul Chryst at Wisconsin. Tom Allen looks to be a good coach at Indiana. P.J. Fleck was a big hire for Minnesota. But these aren't the teams that, at least according to ESPN's FPI, these aren't top 20 teams in college football, and yet they have top 20 coaches. So again, something isn't adding up. You want to sell me on this idea that the best coaches are in the Big Ten, then I need to see more production outside of Ohio State. I need to see more success. Because it's the coaches who are judged on two things. Number one, recruiting. So you want to tell me these are the best coaches in college football, part of that has to be recruiting, which then tells me you're bringing in the best talent. The other part is in the X's and O's. It's using that talent to win games on Saturdays. So you want to tell me that the best coaches are in the Big Ten, well, then they must be getting some of the best talent, and they must be doing some of the best jobs on Saturday. And yet, by the end of the year, those are not the teams we're talking about competing for playoff spots. Something's getting lost in translation. Somewhere along the line, there's something going wrong here. So if the Big Ten has all these great coaches, they need to start winning more. Otherwise, they're either overrated or something else is going wrong here. The players are overrated that they bring in. Something is off. Because the conference that has the best coaches should be the most successful schools, or should be the most successful conference. Like if you look at the top of that ranking or any list, anytime anybody lists the top coaches in college football, look at that top list. Saban's number one. Dabo's number two. They got all sorts of national championships, right? And then even like Jimbo Fisher will usually be in the top 10. Why? Because he won a national championship. And there aren't a lot of coaches that have national championships under their belt. Ed Orgeron is in the top 10 in a lot of lists. Why? Because he won a national championship. There's not a lot of coaches to choose from. But the other coaches, Lincoln Riley is up there because he's at least reached the playoff. Ryan Day is up there because, well, he's at least reached the playoff. They'll be in the top five. But my point being, in order to be one of those top coaches, normally it has to come with that proven success on the field, and that's not really the case for a lot of these coaches in the Big Ten. Which game will be the most impactful in college football this year? Off the top of my head, I would have guessed Georgia-Clemson, because it's not often you'll get two, say, top five teams go up against one another. And it's week one, neutral site, could really alter Clemson's season if they lose that game. For Georgia, they'll have some time to make up for it, but still will stand out that they lost to another top team. That will not be the most impactful game this year, however, according to ESPN's FPI. That's number two on the list, right ahead of Oklahoma and Texas. The most impactful game of the college football season, according to ESPN's FPI, will be week six when Alabama plays Texas A&M. Texas A&M was the number five team in the country last year. Their only loss was to Alabama. That could alter the division race there in the SEC, which then could change the conference race for a champion. Could adjust which one of those teams goes to the playoff this year, potentially. Alabama and Texas A&M. That, according to ESPN FPI, will be the most impactful game on the national championship run or race this year in college football. Georgia-Clemson 2, Oklahoma-Texas 3, then you have Georgia-Florida, and Iowa State-Oklahoma are the top five. We'll wrap up your Thursday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
But a funky finish to your Thursday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Fan talk coming up in about 10 minutes as we wrap up your Thursday afternoon. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. We covered so much once again today. Talked about Game 2 of the NBA Finals tonight. Kyle Shanahan's comments on the Super Bowl choke job from 4 years ago. Clemson's next star quarterback. The Big Ten underwhelming. Sylvester Stallone's most underrated films. Old items that millennials may not know. A wrestling wrap-up, as always, on Thursdays. And a whole lot more packed into the last 3 hours that you can find on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com or on our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store.
And we also came up with a couple of NWO-related trivia questions.
Oh, perfect.
That we could use for some of our giveaways coming up. So brush up on your NWO.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's what people do anyways, regardless. That's how you know, right? This weekend, I think a lot of people are looking forward to brushing up on their NWO knowledge this weekend.
And I think Bobby will be a good source on that, too.
Absolutely. Hey, you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online. Either at our website, charlestonsportsradio.com, through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or, again, our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Appreciate listeners hanging out with us on this Thursday from at least 9 different states and at least 3 different countries today. So we're global. Appreciate you hanging out on this Thursday afternoon.
Like ZZ Top says, we're bad, we're nationwide.
That's right. From coast to coast and worldwide here in the Morrow Midday Show. Hey, next week is the All-Star break, of course, in baseball. And it's considered, next week is always considered the slowest week in sports. But during the All-Star break, looking forward to, we'll catch up with former Major League Baseball players, I think on each day of the All-Star break next week. So far, at least Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we have some former players joining us. So we'll celebrate Major League Baseball's All-Star break with some former Major League Baseball players next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I'm looking forward to that after the weekend. Of course, we'll be here tomorrow as well, wrap up the week, and react to whatever may happen tonight in Game 2 of the NBA Finals. I touched on this earlier. You can find it on demand. But tonight, for the Bucks to try to avoid that 0-2 hole, it will come down to adjustments. Game 1 is the feeling out process. The Bucks were feeling out what the Suns like to do. By the fourth quarter, they already made some changes to try to be able to handle the pick-and-roll situation of Phoenix's offense. Now, with at least a day to prepare, let's see what they bring in Game 2 tonight. Let's see if they could do a better job of handling Chris Paul and Devin Booker, keeping them from getting to the rim, keeping them from getting to the foul line. That's what Mike Budenholzer mentioned to the media yesterday. Can't send them to the line for 26 foul shot attempts, especially when we only make 9 foul shots. They made 25. That's a huge difference. That was the difference in the game. And how do you get to the foul line? By being aggressive, by attacking, by getting those mismatches. When a big, lurchy center can't keep the guard in front of him, and now he's hacking you. He's hitting you from behind, trying to block your shot. He's out of position. So tonight comes down to those adjustments, whatever they may be from Milwaukee, and also the health of Giannis. If Giannis continues to get healthier, the Bucks should continue to get better in this series. The Bucks outscored the Suns when Giannis was actually on the floor in Game 1. They need him to be able to play longer, be more effective, healthier, be able to handle those pick and rolls. He could play the five for them if he, from his knee perspective, right, if he can handle it with that knee injury. And if Giannis is better than he was in Game 1, well, obviously the Bucks stand the better chance as well. We'll see what happens in Game 2 tonight, and we'll break it down on the show tomorrow. Get ready for the sports weekend as well. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. But we'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.